Christian, membership of the Baltic Youth Orchestra is drawn from an extraordinarily diverse group of nations. And I think people would be surprised at how many nations, in fact, border on the Baltic Sea. In fact, it's a good quiz question, I think, you know. Right. And the answer is, how many is it? It's actually nine. Yeah.
But we felt a little sorry for Norway not to be included in anything. So we took them in as well.
Yeah, Norway is a rough ride sometimes. Null point.
But actually, Baltic Youth Philharmonic is our official name. And but you're right. I mean, it is a youth orchestra of this Baltic Sea region.
Yeah.
And it was started 5 years ago.
Yes. Whose brainchild was the project? And what was the objective?
Well, initially, the objective was to set up an orchestra at the Usedom Music Festival, which is one of the co-initiators of this project, with also the what was to be the gas pipeline that runs from Russia to Germany, called Nord Stream. And now it is a reality, and actually there is a pipeline of this kind in place, and in fact the second pipeline, which was just opened weeks ago. And these two companies were the co-initiators of this. I think it was actually a fantastic initial inception of something that could have either gone in a direction of nice little thing for one or two times and then it kind of goes away, or it could have been what it has become now, which is actually the cornerstone of what is to be a whole Baltic music education system, where there's a preparatory orchestra, also an orchestra for alumni, which tours like a festival orchestra, and where the current coaches are still teaching and will continue to teach the youth orchestra, but the alumni will actually start to teach the preparatory orchestra.
I
mean, I wouldn't really say it's a system modeled on the El Sistema model at all, but it is something in that spirit.
Yes.
Because, I mean, the El Sistema model is one which deals with social causes and is very much a tool to alleviate social problems.
Let's just run through the names of some of these countries just so that people know the breadth of this, in case their geography is not too good, you know? So we've got the Scandinavian countries, Sweden, Denmark, Finland, and Norway.
That's right.
Because we didn't want to exclude them. And Poland, Estonia, your homeland, Latvia, Russia, and of course, Germany.
Lithuania also.
Lithuania.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Its catchphrase is a new voice in the north, which I think is a lovely catchphrase. How does it work? So how much of the year, for example, is the orchestra convened?
We wanted to bring together these three different regions to really use the Baltic Sea as the binding force rather than the separating force, because it has always been geographically the thing that separates Scandinavia from Central Europe and Eastern Europe from the rest, you know, and Peter the Great has called it the window to the west, you know, and that's why St. Petersburg was built on the Baltic Sea, you know. And obviously it's geographically a very meaningful place for all of the countries that border it, simply because it has been a binding force for trade in the past, but not for culture. And certainly it has been the thing that has distinguished each nationality to be its own, and really has given identity to the various regions. And that's great, and I'm all for that, because I don't want us to live in some kind of melting pot where everybody is the same, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, how important is national identity in music? Because I could reach for another word, style.
Yeah.
You know, something to which national identity contributes greatly. I mean, that's what separates, say, a Sibelius symphony from a Shostakovich symphony.
Well, exactly. I think that we have to be very proud and continue to support the composers who actually wrote and continue to write national music, or actually is identifiable as coming from that particular region or country. For example, I'm very proud to have, from my country, Arvo Pärt, whose music really sounds like Estonian music.
It's amazing.
And that's, look, a whole nations have been built on, like Finland, for example, on the identity of the music of Jean Sibelius, for example.
Yeah.
Greek, same thing for Norway, or Nielsen for Denmark. National heroes, really.
Mm.
And they are the heritage and just as important as language and any type of literature, or the things that are really, really identifiable as, let's say, Bach in Germany, you know, which is the foundation, it's a pillar of their civilization, so to say, you know. And I feel that if we don't support cultural education, which really this project is about, it's not so much about music. We use the music as a tool because we're an orchestra, obviously, but this project is about cultural education and how important it is to realize that if we do not take a serious and active role in supporting this, then we're basically kind of cutting the legs off of our torso, and we have nothing to stand on anymore as people, as societies, as nations, as a general civilization.
I guess what's interesting to me as an outsider is that players from a particular region will inevitably influence the other players in their understanding of the style of the culture and the music where they come from.
Right, right.
I mean, you must draw upon that as the unifier.
First of all, my family is, yes, it's Estonian, but I have a Russian mother, you know. And Estonia is a very unique place because, you know, for 700 years it was under German rule, actually. The Estonian language was actually banned until the middle of the 1800s, officially. You know, people went to jail or got a death sentence if they got caught writing Estonian, for example. That is kind of the history of that region where things are very mixed. You know, Russians were there, the Swedes were there. The Danes actually established the city of Tallinn, which is... Tallinn means Danish town, old Danish town. You know? And culturally speaking, we're very different, but we're still all European and we're very much the same because the roots are the same.
You've talked about creating new vibes, mm-hmm. is a phrase you used, with this project and this orchestra. What specifically do you mean by that?
Well, I have a very clear way of approaching all music, which is through rhythm and phrasing predominantly. In certain genres, this kind of rhythmic phrasing is called groove, right? Certainly not in the classical genre because people would consider it unserious. But I think that there's a lot to be learned from that because rhythm is non-existent without phrasing, and phrasing cannot be existent without rhythm. And all of this is driven by harmonic motion. So as things push and pull, you actually naturally phrase into a certain beat, the direction which is written into the music. It can't be any other way. So it, in fact, then clears up all the bowing issues. It clears up all the movement of breathing for a wind instrument. It all of a sudden makes the music very, very organic. And I feel that sometimes, traditionally, we have been kind of taught to think more cerebrally about the music, not so much physically, about how, let's say, it relates to a dance step, or how a chorus would sing that phrase, which is written for not only a wind instrument, but also for strings, because I feel like strings, they need to breathe just as much as the winds do, except sometimes they just put the bow on the string and they pull, and without any kind of motion of forward or backward or just you know? And so a lot of these things are tools that I use to get people who have never played together before on the same page very, very quickly, in 3-4 days, basically, and create a cohesive orchestra.
It's very well put, and I'm with you on that. I think the physicality of music is something that is far too often overlooked.
Ignored, yes.
Thank you. you were raised in America, but this penchant for jazz, and I guess the first time I saw you conduct, you did Duke Ellington's Harlem.
Oh, yeah.
And it's obviously in your blood. I mean, you just had a completely instinctive, to me, understanding of how it went.
Yeah.
And it's a piece you did this year with the orchestra, I gather.
I did that as part of a co-production which we did with Bujazzo, which is the Bundes Jazz Orchestra. I thought we could do some kind of Kurt Weill, you know, Rise and Fall of Mahogany or something. But in fact, I mean, let's go for the real thing. And so, yeah.
That is a good lesson, though, to teach young musicians about how you can apply that rule of freedom within discipline throughout music.
Right.
I always remember Nigel Kennedy, violinist, who plays a lot of jazz, saying, you know, that he applied the same principles to his playing of the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto or the Elgar Violin Concerto or whatever.
I think the greatest master of groove is Bach. And sometimes people say, well, what do you mean by that? Well, I mean that because he has a built-in rhythm section in everything that he wrote.
That's great.
And it's not just the propulsiveness. It's just the innate, natural way of how the harmonies feed off the phrasing. And it's driven by propulsive rhythm. You know? That is the fundamental that is being used in R&B and hip-hop and rap and all of these things today. Pop music is built on Bach.
Yeah. One of the strands of your work this year, again, was looking at arrangements, the Mahler Bach arrangements.
Right.
So again, a different tilt on the music from a later period.
And
the Brahms Piano Quartet.
Right,
in G minor. It's a fantastic vehicle for young players, I think.
Well, I'm all for arrangements. And I feel that arrangements are even more of a statement of renewal and celebration of something that we appreciate so much and has become so much part of our culture. The reason why Mahler reorchestrated Schumann is not because he thought it was bad. It's because he wanted to update it for his generation. Mm. I feel that interpretation, now we have a new style, and it's just like fashion, you know, it constantly, the ingredients are the same, but we use them slightly differently.
Yes.
We have a different cut, you know.
Yes.
The dresses are similar, but different.
Absolutely.
You know?
How do you convey all this to your youngsters? I notice you have a Baltic Youth Orchestra lab, which is a kind of educational laboratory. Do discussions like this happen there? I mean, you're so good at talking about these issues that you're obviously a good teacher.
I hope that will be the case one day. I think that the biggest beneficiary of teaching is actually the teacher himself. You know? and I think I learn a lot from doing what I do. And I get better every time I do it. And I feel that itself gives me the possibility to give them an open mind and tell them, hey, listen, don't just do what I tell you, but think for yourself.
The orchestra has its own record label now. Is the plan to have this as a kind of throughout the year project?
Well, the Baltic Youth Philharmonic will remain in the summer. However, we do want to create an orchestra which is kind of more year-round orchestra, which is the Baltic Philharmonic Orchestra, which is for the alumni of the Baltic Youth Philharmonic. And then that orchestra would be the one that would tour throughout the year and would kind of represent our Baltic music education system, actually kind of be the flagship, so to say.
Yes.
But it'll be an orchestra made of already young professionals. You know, it is the graduates, so to say. And then in the following step would be to create a preparatory orchestra of people who are up to 18 years old, which are pre-Baltic Youth Philharmonic. It would be a kind of a three-tiered system of people in the Baltic Philharmonic Orchestra who actually teach the preparatory orchestra to go into the Baltic Youth Philharmonic, where you have the regular setup of coaches who are brought in actually from outside, who are actually a very important aspect in this whole operation, because there are all people who kind of think along the same lines as me, and really it's a hand-picked team.
It's a grand idea. It really is a grand scheme.
And you know, in our project, I also have a conducting program where we choose three conductors every year to be my assistants. Then we have a composers program, which is run by Daniel Schneider, where we choose participants who actually have to write pieces during the academy period, which is about 10 days, and we workshop them and perform them with the orchestra.
I was going to say about new music, that's amazing, but giving the opportunity to workshop work in progress is something that doesn't happen very often.
No, not at all. And I think this is absolutely essential to give that perspective not only to the musicians, but also to the composers. And plus, now we started a cooperation with a recording academy in Detmold. That means that young engineers, tonemeisters, aspiring producers get to actually record the orchestra. So this year was a fantastic year also for us, because for the first time we had a conducting masterclass which was run by Kurt Mazur, and in fact we're going to now expand that to have not only he do a conducting masterclass, but actually start a small conducting competition. And we have a great panel, or I would say an advisory board, which is made up of Esa-Pekka Salonen, and Valery Gergiev, Maris Janssons, Kurt Mazur, and Mark Janowski, who will be more and more involved in actually these kind of activities.
Really, you got it wrapped up, self-contained.
No, but think about it. I mean, all of these conductors, they're actually from this region. They are the representatives of the future of music in this region. And I feel like they're giving their support and joining forces because they see the importance of what we're doing.
So what's the plan, Christian? World domination?
just Baltic domination.
What do you hope finally will come out of this project?
Well, first of all, I hope that this is something that will create a tradition for corporate and private support of educational projects like this, where culture really is the primary focus. Even though politicians may have good intentions, they are in a system where they don't have enough time to actually implement any kind of long-term vision, simply because they're in office and then they're thinking about how to get reelected. You know? So short-term fixes are the way that governments basically operate these days. And I feel that corporations now actually operate in a way like small countries, you know. And I feel that their responsibility is to society. And also, if you can give back to society, it gives sends a really important message to people that we really are the people who have to take care of each other rather than depend on the government all the time to take care of us. And I think it begins with culture and an educated society of people who actually understand how important culture is for us.